I expect that every one of us have heard of creeds in connection with the church. You know what we have in mind by that, a statement of belief that the local church sets out as being the one that everybody in that church believes. Sometimes we call these confessions, the Westminster Confession and the Augsburg Confession. Sometimes we call them standards, the standards of the church. They are more or less formalized and authorized statements of faith which we set out to the world. I wonder if we have ever fully understood the importance of these things. I think I can see it here in the book of Acts when I'm reading in chapter 16 in the book of Acts. And I want to read just a few verses. Chapter 16, verses 4 and 5. This continues the story of Paul starting out on his second missionary journey. You'll remember that in the end of chapter 15, when Paul started out, he took Silas with him as a companion. At the beginning of chapter 16, he chose Timothy to be a helper. And we've just finished looking at the first three verses of chapter 16, in which Paul called Timothy to be his helper in his ministry. Now I want you to look at verses 4 and 5. And you will have in this apostolic company, in this company of Paul, you have at least Paul and Silas and Timothy. There may have been others, but at least these three. Now notice this as I read in chapter 16, verses 4 and 5. And as they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees for to keep, that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. And so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. That simple statement. Now who were they again? Paul and Silas and Timothy. And they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees for to keep. What decrees? Well, it says here in verse 4, that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. Do you remember at the beginning of the chapter 15, we had that church council at Jerusalem when they had a big argument as to whether or not Gentiles had to become Jews before they could become Christians? And you remember how the church settled it. And the church wrote a letter that should be taken to all the Gentile churches and they should be told what they should do. There were certain things that the church at home wanted them to be careful about. Their conduct. But so far as their ecclesiastical relationships were concerned, they're going through the ceremony of circumcision. They didn't have to do that. They just had to be careful how they conducted themselves in a way that would be worthy as Christians, and it was spelled out for them with one or two specific instructions for them to have. Now, those were the decrees. And Paul and his company delivered these decrees to the people. These decrees that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. And the result was that the churches were established in the faith and increased in number daily. That is to say, it was a good thing. It worked out well. Now let me ask this question to your own mind. Would not Paul have had a message of his own? Don't you think Paul could have just preached straight off from his own heart and his knowledge of the gospel? And don't you think Paul could have solved this problem that those decrees were supposed to solve? The question as to whether or not a Gentile had to become a Jew? Don't you think Paul knew better? He wrote Galatians on the basis of it. And he and Barnabas had that first missionary journey all among pagans. And the pagans had just turned to them by the hundreds, had just come to believe. Paul would have known. Could he not have given confident guidance to these young churches? Wasn't Paul able to do that? But what did he do? He delivered unto them the decrees that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. You see, there is a strength shared in the common witness when all the people agree on a certain formal accepted statement. And here is the reason for our creeds, for our standards. When we have a creed or we have a confession, we have a standard of any kind, we agree on a statement of faith, and we set that out. When I give that out, the reason it's so strong is it's not just mine. It comes from the church as a whole. I present it because I believe in it, but the form of it was set by the church as a whole. That's much more impressive than just my own. Now, I can give my own personal testimony that I do verily believe thus and so, but when it is spelled out in an open way, such as you have in a creed or in a confession, the people can receive it with more confidence. I would feel like saying that our own day and time, the Protestant Church should study this. We should be far more conscious of its importance. In our day and time, it seems that we have so many ambitious persons who want to be pioneers. They actually are innovators. They bring in new ideas. They want to do something big and original. And they're constantly saying something of their own. They don't relate what they say to that which we commonly hold. Because we've got it in our Westminster Confession of Faith in our own church, we have our own standards, and every other church will have the same. Any congregation that you belong to, any denomination that you're in, will have certain definite statement of doctrine. No matter how they word it, no matter how they phrase it, they'll have some things that's understood that they all will say together. Now, whenever we've got a situation where someone comes along who's going to differ with that, he's not going to pay any attention to it even. He's just going to ignore it. He's just going to treat it as if it never had been. And he's going to talk entirely on his own. And he will come in with his own ideas, even if they're different. But he'll bring them in because they're his own. That's in keeping with us wanting to be free. But you know, this freedom that we want in this way needs to be curbed. Certainly we can be free to go down the street, but not on the other man's yard. We need to stay inside the curbstones, so far as the street is concerned. We're at liberty in the street. We're not liberty in the other man's lawn. And so it is with reference to the things that we say in public. We'd be free to say certain things, but we're not free to say anything. And so far as the church as a whole is concerned, it'd be very, very important for the leaders to take a look at Paul here. Paul and Silas and Timothy, going out to preach, delivered the decrees which were ordained by the apostles and elders in Jerusalem. It's not incumbent upon us to follow every voice we hear. As a matter of fact, many voices we hear are not true. How would you know? And of course, that's one of the big reasons for the creed. The creed is a sort of a testing device. If the man is speaking according to the creed, we will accept what he says as true. If he's not speaking according to the creed, we will know, according to the creed that we have agreed upon, that he is not in line with our way of thinking, and we can treat him accordingly. There is also a source of strength in saying the same things. As I've just already said, if I tell you myself what I think, that's one thing, and you've got my word for it. But if I tell you what we think, when all of us together say have agreed on, it's got more weight and it's got more power. You see, back at the beginning of the time of the Protestant Church challenged and repudiated the authority of the clergy that was at that time controlling the church. And when they repudiated the clergy as not being infallible, when they would claim that priests could make mistakes, and that there wasn't any such thing as a human being of any sort who had power that would be over the Bible, when they had all that in mind, they said that the Bible was the only infallible guide and rule in matters of faith and practice. And when they first made that statement, that the Bible is the only infallible guide and rule in matters of faith and practice, they had in mind clergymen who would tell you what you ought to do in faith and practice. And they claimed that no man anywhere in the world had the authority or the ability to tell you this. But the scriptures did have, and they accepted the Bible as such. Now, when they had repudiated the work of the clergy, they still were then faced with this problem. How would the authority be known? If you're not going to have a man tell you what's right and wrong, how would you ever know what's right and wrong? And so they set out certain statements. In Switzerland, they prepared the Helvetic Confession, which was a formula, if you will, a sort of a set of beliefs, very much like a set of doctrines, which were set out. This is what we're going to all agree upon. The Lutheran Church and the Lutheran people generally agreed in the Augsburg Confession. And here you have a confession which sets out what they would hold to. The Episcopalian Church, or Anglican Church as we call it in England, had the 39 articles, 39 statements of faith that they all agreed upon, which became the basis of their doctrine. And then the British Isles as a whole collaborated in turning out the Westminster Confession of Faith, which has become the confession of many even down to this day. These all occurred in one period of church history after the church had repudiated the clergy as being the infallible guide and rule. And if you weren't going to have a clergy, you had to have somebody. And so they set out these statements and said, we'll be guided by that. Very much like it's true that you have an umpire in a ball game, but the umpire is only supposed to apply the rules that have been agreed upon by everybody. Now, having put all this out, let us notice in verse 5, and so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. And really and truly, that would appear that they were approved of God. So were the churches established in the faith. The churches were made strong, and they were securely anchored in their faith by this procedure. What was that? By the apostolic company, Paul, Silas, Timothy, and others that were with them, setting out before the people the decrees that the elders and the leaders in Jerusalem had set forth. And these missionaries said these things and presented these things, and the church was strengthened. It was established in the faith and increased in number daily. And that would be, to my mind, a very great encouragement that we should act in this way ourselves. Apparently this is approved of God, that we seek, if possible, to say the same things and to say them in a way that will strengthen people who hear us. Our God and Heavenly Father, add thy blessing to our thinking along these lines. Encourage us personally to be obedient and to share with others in our common witness before the world. For thy name's sake we ask it. Amen.